This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to learn about a project at Moat Marine Laboratory that's growing a salt-tolerant vegetable called sea purslane in an aquaponic system that's also raising redfish. But first, we're going to revisit a conversation we had in April to mark Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We learned about what one local nonprofit is doing to raise awareness about sexual assault as a public health, human rights, and social justice issue. And we met two women who are sexual assault survivors to hear their stories. Let's hear that now. I'm joined by Sarah Elmore. She's the Outreach and Awareness Coordinator at the Center for Abuse and Rape Emergencies in Punta Gorda. It's a nonprofit that helps survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and other violent crimes in Charlotte County. Sarah, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for inviting us, Julie.
I'm also joined in studio by Leslie Barton. She is a Punta Gorda-based realtor, and she's a sexual assault survivor who now advocates for other survivors. Leslie, thanks for coming in to share your story.
Thank you, Julie.
Today's show is an encore presentation, so we're not taking calls. But if you'd like to weigh in, you can do so via social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Sarah, I want to start with you. Tell me a little bit about the Center for Abuse and Rape Emergencies, or CARE, as it's called.
Okay. Charlotte County Rape Crisis Center was originally organized in 1983 by law enforcement officer Billy Riley after a 14-year-old girl was raped, teenage girl was raped. So he appealed to the community to come up with volunteers to start the sexual assault portion or component of CARE. But then in 1985, we noticed that a lot of domestic calls, violence calls were coming in. So that's when we transitioned into both sexual assault and violent crimes. And now also a crime of or we service any survivor of any type of crime. Like if someone was hit by a DUI or drunk driver, if they were murdered, you know, we provide secondary counseling services as well to the families. Mm-hmm. We also have a 24-hour hotline or helpline, which is open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that number, just to put it out there, is 941-627-6000.
And is this just in Charlotte County?
This is in CARE is in Charlotte County, yes.
Okay.
Correct. So we service Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, and Englewood.
Uh-huh. And what do people get when they call in the hotline? Say, I mean, even if they're not from Charlotte County and they call in and they, hey, this thing just happened, do they get direction or ideas of how to handle themselves?
Yes,
now?
Absolutely. I mean, we are going to talk to anybody that calls in, and we're going to provide them the services that they need in that moment of their crisis. Mm-hmm. But we do also provide them resources outside of our scope of what we're able to do if they're not in county, obviously. So, you know, you might have another organization similar to ours. We'll try to connect them right away with them. But mm-hmm. but during the immediate crisis, we walk them through the entire step.
One of the things that we talked about before we went on the air that I thought was kind of interesting, you said that there's a much smaller number of sexual assault cases that are actually reported to the police than the number that you deal with at CARE.
That is correct. So only 20% of sexual assault victims, male or female, will report. The other 80% do not. So just to give you an example, and again, I'm doing approximate numbers because I don't have them in front of me, but there were 48, I believe it was 48 to 68 sexual assaults reported in Charlotte County last
year. Reported to the police.
Reported to the police, correct. But we serviced approximately 161 survivors. So that goes to show you that not everybody does report, and for various reasons. You know, again, we talked kind of in the beginning of the show, maybe one of the reasons is they feel guilty because they were out drinking and thought that they, you know, had provoked it. They're embarrassed, their families, there's just many reasons why people won't report. There's a lot of reasons. So the calls that we get, each one is unique. And they do react differently.
Would you like to maybe encourage people to call if they have questions about things and people who may be fearful of being pressured into reporting to police?
Yes. We're there for all aspects of what the victim or slash survivor needs. And we are big on empowerment. So when you call in, we're not there to tell you what to do, but we're there to advise you and give you the resources so that you can make those decisions for yourself. Because in a lot of cases, you know, even with – or especially with domestic violence, the victim has been controlled, has been told what to do. They don't have that – you know, they need to learn to become independent and make those decisions for themselves.
There's a lot going on there. You know,
yeah, so much going on.
And everything changes so much from person to person and situation to situation, but there are some kinds of similarities.
Yes.
that the victims of these types of violence end up sharing?
Yeah, there are. And I mean, you see kind of a circle or a chain of events that is similar, like the guilt, the fear, and whether it's sexual assault or domestic violence. You see a lot of the same type or you hear a lot of the same type of triggers, things such as that.
Uh-huh. So you said that last year you worked with about 160-some?
Yes. I'm new in the position for 2 months, but my supervisor, Wendy Silva, had shared those statistics with our team, which I was so impressed with and so proud of our organization because people – the outreach was getting out there to where people knew that they could call in and we could help them.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining the show today, we're marking Sexual Assault Awareness Month with Sarah Elmore. She's the Outreach and Awareness Coordinator at the Center for Abuse and Rape Emergencies in Punta Gorda. I'm also joined in studio by Leslie Barton. She is a Punta Gorda-based realtor as well as a sexual assault survivor and advocate. And if you'd like to add your voice to our conversation, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So, Leslie, I want to turn to you now. How long have you been connected with CARE in Punta Gorda?
I'd say about, I don't know, I think it's about 3 years now. I moved to Punta Gorda about 4.5 years ago. And after about a year, I was connected with them about, 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. What led you to them?
Well, I'm a sexual assault survivor. I've been an outspoken sexual assault survivor for a long time. And I wanted to do something in my new community that I moved from. I'm originally from the Chicagoland area to help sister and brother survivors, you know, get through one of the worst things that will ever happen to them in their entire lives.
You were sexually assaulted almost 20 years ago in Chicago.
Yes. Well, actually in the suburbs of Chicago, but yes.
Just outside of Chicago. You tried to sound the alarm about this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this case for people that aren't familiar with it. It made a lot of news up there.
Yes, it did. It also made national news, too, on Crime Watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was actually, interesting enough, we're almost at the 18-year mark. It'll be 18 years on June 3rd. And right now, 1 year ago, he was at trial. And he was convicted finally after 17 years of waiting, convicted of criminal sexual assault and criminal sexual abuse on May 1st. So what happened was for 18 years ago, I was out with some friends and we had had a couple of drinks. Mm-hmm. And basically what happened was he walked in the evening and I'd known him as the salon. I thought he owned the tanning salon I went to. The way I knew him, though, was that he actually barked at me, yelled at me once. I didn't know him any other way than that. It was just one moment in time because I had asked if I could share my tanning salon membership with somebody, and he didn't like that question. And then I figured, ooh, I'm going to stay away from this person. Something's not right.
You had encountered him at one point. Yeah,
just for an instant. And I never actually walked back into the tanning salon again after that,
uh-huh.
Where I went all the time. And then he came into the bar where I was at, and it was just a neighborhood Cheers place that everybody went to. You know, everybody knew each other.
Where everybody knows
together.
Your name,
yeah.
Right? We all know the
yeah,
song.
Yeah, you know. And so he walked in, and he walked in with my neighbor, and my neighbor introduced me to him, and I said, I already know him. He yelled at me once. You know, I was just frank about it. And then he said, no, I didn't. And I said, well, okay, it's no big deal. And then he got upset with me. And got, again, a bit yelly. And I then decided, okay, I'm walking away. That's it. That's mm-hmm. the end of that. And I walked away. And then he walked up to me probably about 5 minutes later with a drink in his hand, apologizing profusely, saying, you know, he should never treat customers like this. He shouldn't treat anyone like this. He has, you know, he doesn't mean to. He does this occasionally. No. Please accept a drink. I said no. I said no a number of times. That I wasn't interested. I said, you know, let's just go do it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, gosh. Okay, people have bad days. Forgive the guy. Forgive mm-hmm. the person. You know, that's what you think. You know, everybody has a bad day. So I said, okay, fine. And I took the drink and I sat down with him and my neighbor and started talking to them. And not too long afterwards, I felt fuzzy. And I hadn't had probably an hour or two. I was drinking water for a while. And it was really weird. And I'm thinking, But then I thought, well, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten anything. And then the place was closing, and I said to my neighbor, I said, let's go get some buffalo chicken wings, garlic buffalo chicken wings. Everybody would go and get this mm-hmm. at that time. And then, of course, And then my neighbor didn't want to go, but the other gentleman did. And he's like, you know, I'll go. And I looked at my neighbor. I'm like, nah. And he's like, no, Leslie, he's fine. Go and get something to eat. And I said, okay. I said, and the strangest part about it was over and over again, my inner voice was saying, which was coming as an outer voice, we're going straight to get garlic buffalo chicken wings and coming straight home. Mm-hmm. That's it. No stops, no nothing. And I said it over and over.
Yeah.
And then I got in his car and understand everyone knows everyone on the North Shore.
Yeah.
Everybody does. I got in his car and I went to – and the next thing I know, I lost time, a serious amount of time. And when I woke up, it was like I woke up. Suddenly I knew – I realized we were in front of somewhere. I'm like, where are we? And I'm like, I told you, we were going directly to get chicken wings and go home, not stopping anywhere. And then he said, well, I forgot to shut everything down, you know. And then I'd worked retail and I thought, well, okay, I've done that before. But and he kept insisting, you know, I think you can use the bathroom. You'd look like you need to splash some water in your face, you know, and go to the bathroom. And I'm thinking, no. And I said, no, I don't need to. And he goes, no, come on in. I know your neighbor. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you know me. You know my business. So I walked in and then – and I thought to myself I shouldn't be, but I also felt like I was walking on clouds when I was walking in.
Felt weird, yeah.
Very strange. All of a sudden, boom.
This is kind of like in an era, too, that was a little bit – it was before – 17 years ago, we're talking about pre-smartphones, before Uber, before
– before it all.
Yeah.
Before it all.
You're a little bit more of an isolated kind of situation at that time.
Completely isolated. And at the same time, when I walked in, the moment I heard the lock – turned behind me, I cringed. My whole body cringed. And I realized, this isn't right. I went right for the bathroom. I locked myself in. It didn't help.
Yeah.
It didn't help. When I don't remember getting out of the bathroom. I don't. I had another blackout. And then I kept thinking to myself, did he drug me? Did he drug me? And I don't know to this day. I can't say he did or didn't. But and then all of a sudden, I remembered – all of a sudden I woke up and I was inside of a tanning booth. I was looking at the tanning booth. I'm like, this is really – doesn't make any sense. And I go, we're going right now to get buffalo chicken wings right now, and that's it. And I pushed forward towards him, and I pushed him to get him out of the way to get past. And he goes, you aren't going anywhere. And he grabbed me, and he threw me down on the tanning bed, and he started strangling me and – you know, you watch those silly Lifetime Network movies that you figure, oh, I'll die before I'm going to let anybody rape me. Well, the reality is I still wanted to live. So after fighting and fighting and fighting through this cloud, I finally had to let him rape me. I had no other choice.
And just get it over with. You know, people like to say that they know what they're going to do in a situation.
No, I was certain I did, but you don't.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. And then after, you're wondering, did I make the right decision? Was that the best thing that I should have done? And there's a lot of questioning of yourself after this.
Yes.
And then that's what you were talking about earlier, Sarah, about taking on that blame.
Yeah, you take on the blame, the shame, the stigma, everything. It's what was I wearing? Why didn't I do this? I mean, I even had a felony reviewer ask me, why didn't you break down the glass? It was all glass in the front. Why didn't you break it down? Honestly, I didn't think of it.
Yeah, I'm sure
so
I'm going to break a plate glass window. Sure.
I was so traumatized. I was so – when it was over and the only way that he would stop strangling me and also through the fog. If I didn't have the fog, it could have been different too. But I just never entered my mind because I was just completely and utterly – I went somewhere else. I wasn't there anymore. He had taken everything from me, my power – my confidence, my
self-esteem, your faculties.
Everything.
Right?
Everything. He invaded everything.
But it feels like I was reading your story before, and it feels like that was continued when you talked to the felony prosecutor. And he was questioning your decision-making and
yes.
said the best he can get out of it. Because you didn't report for a week.
Well, 5 days.
Okay, 5 days. But you had the visible hand marks on your neck.
Well, what happened actually was – when I woke up the next morning
– the bruising.
I was blank, okay? And that's why they also are certain that I'd been drugged. I was blank. It came back in horrifying flashbacks. And I even called my friend. I said – and I woke up and I looked in the mirror and there's bruising. I can't speak. And I'm like, what happened last night? Why can't I remember? And I blame myself for that too. And I'm like, why? This has never happened before. I never blacked out like this. And then, yes, what happened was it took me 5 days to kind of piece it together and figure out what's going on and even get the courage knowing that literally my career was going to be over. They weren't going to go after him. They weren't, you know, they'd go after him, but I mean, everybody would blame me because back then it was still stranger danger. It mm-hmm. wasn't someone you knew. So, but I decided I couldn't let anybody else get hurt. But yes, the felony reviewer literally attacked me. Now, they've changed the felony review in Illinois and other places since then. But yeah, he went after me. Now, the bruising didn't show up when he saw me. But what happened was we had a witness to the bruising. We had a huge witness. My boyfriend at the time saw it all. And he's yeah. like, what happened? I'm like, and
that's
I had
no idea.
I had no idea.
Yeah. When I'm talking to you, I can sense that you're not a shrinking violet. You're not going to be a wallflower in any kind of situation. You don't seem like someone who's easily scared or intimidated. So talk about your story and then standing up and saying, this thing happened 5 days later, I just think of so many women who don't and who aren't as powerful of a personality as I'm picking up from you.
And I've got to say, coming forward even 5 days later and me being who I am, and you're right, I'm far from a shrinking violet, was beyond difficult for me too. It was literally the responsibility that I couldn't let anybody else get hurt, you know. But I knew, and justifiably, it did turn out this way, that the people I knew in my job, everything, were going to give me a hard time, and they did. It was a different time.
And things have evolved quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
But not quite far enough. And I just want to remind people, if you're just now tuning into the show, we're marking Sexual Assault Awareness Month during this part of today's program. And we've been talking with Leslie Barton, who's been recounting an experience she had 17 or 18 years ago. 17?
It'll be 18 years June 3rd.
Okay. And there is somebody who is joining us now on the phone. Leslie, you mentioned that she would be calling in.
Yes.
Would you like to say hello to your survivor sister?
Hello, my survivor sister.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome,
hello,
brave soul.
Hello.
And I understand
Hi.
That you have remained anonymous during your complaints with this same assaulter, the same person who did what he did to Leslie, and this also apparently happened to you?
Yes, it did.
Try to breathe, honey. Try to breathe.
You've got
Sorry.
This.
You're okay.
I'm with you.
I'm a little emotional.
I'm with you.
Yeah. It's completely normal. Just breathe.
It was a while ago. It's just whenever you talk about it can be a little difficult. So, yeah.
It brings it all back up. So you've remained anonymous, but you wanted to come and talk on the show. Why do you feel like it's important for you to kind of share what your story is?
Well, I think I think it's important for every single individual to understand that, you know, when they're faced with a situation, especially when it's such a personal situation and where, you know, when you talk about your body and it is literally a violation. And I think back to when it happened to me, the first thing that happened was my immediate frame of mind was going back to what will people think? How could I have let this happen? I punished myself. I put myself in this situation. So it's always the blame. The blame game is always what we did wrong. And I think it's important to tell people that it's not what you did wrong. You didn't make the decision to harm yourself. You made that decision to be in a place, but not to give your you never give someone that permission to violate you. And when it happens, you know, I think it's important that we let those people know it's okay. You know, take some time and come forward. It doesn't have to be, you know, on a radio show or anything like that. And sometimes, and in my situation, when I finally was able to come forward, it doesn't mean that, you know, people are going to be understanding either. But there's lots of other people who have been through it too. And we need you, you know. We absolutely need you, because it was without Leslie even, I don't know if I would even be on this radio show right now. It is a very personal thing. It's embarrassing, you know, what happened.
Wait a minute. You didn't do anything wrong. The only one to blame ever is the predator that preys. And you are courageous, beautiful, strong. And if it hadn't been for your testimony and aggravation, if you had not come forward as one of the most recent survivors, he would have never been put away. You remember that. You are a hero.
You're a lot stronger than you think you are.
Don't ever forget that, my darling. Never.
Absolutely.
Does it feel better to know that this person is now put away?
I wish he was put away longer.
Yeah.
Don't we all?
What's his current situation? He's in jail now?
Yeah. He received 13 years, and I'm not saying her name until she's ready to say it, but he received 13 years, and what they did was burn in aggravation. It's called burning in aggravation at the sentencing. Mine was passed, okay? But there were two more, which was this brave soul that I love with all my heart and another woman who couldn't even come to the courtroom. She was terrified. They let the police officer speak for her. And they burned their two cases because he was arrested for four. They burned their two cases in aggravation to get more time on that first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that she wishes she had gone through with the trial. She would have, but that was kind of taken out of her hands.
Absolutely.
But he only got 13 years that time. And the next one, the second one, he pled guilty after swearing up and down that he wasn't guilty and that that they did it the same time as the Cosby trial. You wouldn't believe the things that he said. And then he finally pled guilty because he was facing 97 years. He only got 4 years on the second one, and I think two of them were probation.
So total of 13 years now plus the four.
Right, which is 17 years, which is less time that he put me in jail for, if you think about it.
Yeah,
17 years I had to wait. Yeah. The bricks of blame, shame, you know, stigma that – literally, you put around yourself until finally you realize, no, what are you thinking? The only person to blame, the only person to shame, the only person that should be hiding their face. You know, they hide our faces and they distort our voices to protect us because we're victims, although we're not. We're survivors and we're thrivers. And the thing is the people that should be hiding is them.
Well, and I also think there needs to be a level of support there. Because even when we do, so, you know, the emotions that you go through after a situation like that is you immediately, you know, what I did was not your typical, oh, I'm going to run and call the police, oh, I'm going to do this and that. I didn't. I did not run and call the police. In fact, like I had mentioned, I was embarrassed. I was scared. More importantly, I have personally, when something like that happens, people don't consider the fact that what is that person going to be on? You know, the violation and the rape. You know, I was going through a divorce. You know, I had my own personal situations that were happening that I weighed against what this man did to me. And honestly, what this man did to me, as important and, you know, as awful as it was, I had my own situations that I was also dealing with. So I didn't do exactly what people are told to do or what you think that they should do. And then when I finally was able to come forward and I went to the police, honestly, they made me feel like I was just an idiot.
How long did it take for you to come forward?
I would say it took me a good 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And when I started contacting them, it was almost like they didn't believe me. And I felt even like, you know, no one cares. No one cares. You know what? Forget it. I give up. Whatever.
How long ago did this happen to you?
This happened, I want to say like 2010,
I think.
2010, somewhere around there. Like I said, I was going through I had my own personal situation.
Yeah, when you're going through a divorce, things are incredibly messy and you just don't know what's going to be used against you.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, you know, it was
absolutely
interesting.
100%.
You know what's interesting is they said something about rapists. They called him the tanning salon serial rapist, Mark Winter. They said something about Mark Winter about the fact that he had an MO. He always – and he seemed to be able to – and they all do. all predators seem to have this sixth sense to know when their prey is going through something that might stop them from reporting them. I had just gone through my mom having a heart attack. And so that was literally my mom had kicked me out of the house and told me, I want you to go out and have a drink and leave me alone. Because she's very strong.
To relax.
She's a very strong woman.
I find that kind of easy to believe.
Yeah. And she was – and so he knew. And I had also had problems with my back. So he knew. He somehow knew. He knew what she was going through. He knew that all of us, every one of us had something going on at the time being. And he was able to take advantage of it. He was able to worm his way in.
You mentioned that he was considered a serial rapist. In all, how many people ended up coming forward to report him over all that time?
There's nine of us known. Nine known survivors. I we're certain there's more.
Well, I mean, Sarah, you were just saying 20% exactly. are reported. So if 9 is 20%, it's a significant number of people would be as almost like cockroaches. You see one, there's probably
a
lot more.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is what their promise to me was when I finally said I'd allow him to plead guilty to the battery was they said, well, just know if you allow this, you know, then plead guilty, the next time he does this, he'll go away. And I go, what? Yeah. I go, wait, did you just say to me the next time? So in other words, you're saying to me, you want me to basically hope for him hurting another woman so then he gets put away for good? And they're like, I said, I want you to tell me this right now. Admit this. And that – because this is something you can never hope for.
But even then it didn't kind of happen. That,
and that's the craziest part about it because Cook County suburbs – Cook County City are in two different computer systems, so they didn't talk to each other. So one of my sister survivors came forward, and they threw it out with no probable cause. I was probable cause.
Yeah. And then you're navigating the legal system, which is something that's brand new, so you kind of have to take a crash course in how law works. And
well, and I think that that's one of the important things about CARE is because we do offer legal advocacy for survivors. It's so important that people understand that CARE is just more than a hotline. It's more than a shelter. We will literally have an advocate go through hospital response from the time, you know, they go to get a forensic exam to the legal process to economic empowerment. So much. But, I mean, I'm sure back then, you know, because I don't
– Well, I did have an advocate, but they couldn't – It still was a different time.
Yeah.
I do remember that the state's attorney was angry as heck at the felony reviewer because they tied their hands. Yeah. They couldn't do what the felony reviewer wouldn't let them do.
Well, I'm thinking that things have changed significantly in the last several years. You know, we've had the Me Too movement where I'm feeling like maybe that can lead women to feel, I don't know about more comfortable about, but slightly more empowered to report and know what's been done is wrong. What's been done to them is wrong. But still, it's a very deeply personal experience, I think. For women, they may not even if the society is telling them you are a survivor and you have been victimized by this thing and you should not feel shame, you still kind of inside you just kind of do.
You do.
Yeah.
Martina, are you there?
Yes, I am. And you know what I think actually, and this is what drives me nuts, is I think we actually need to start. So, yes, we have support for victims, but no is no. So I wasn't under the influence. Yeah, now, just to let you guys know, I am an alcoholic, okay? So I don't drink. it's not good for me. I'm allergic. I have allergies. So I don't drink. I don't do drugs. So I was literally completely stone-cold sober. And when it comes to situations like this, there was, no is no. That doesn't in if someone is drinking and if someone is under the influence and you still feel like there is you need to have a touch that person or do something with that person, they are not coherent, that's not okay. It's not okay in any way, shape or form. If someone is passed out and you decide to have intercourse with them, that's not okay. We need to make sure that people know that this is not okay from young men to young women. It is wrong.
Precisely.
And to your point, I mean, she is absolutely 100% correct. And that's another thing that CARE does is we teach education within the community because we're trying to prevent these things from happening.
One of the other conversations.
And for the community to support people when they see things like this going on, we have to take some accountability and responsibility. If you see something that's going awry, you need to step in. And there's a
green dot.
Yeah, we have a green dot program that teaches the community exactly how to do that. Doesn't mean you have to go be the hero and get yourself, you know, beat up or whatever.
Right in the middle of it.
There's different ways to approach that. And I would encourage anybody. Have you been to the green dot?
I actually haven't been to it. I've been through another training with it, but I am going to go to green dot. But the interesting thing is I was out the other night and I did exactly what Green Dot would have taught me because I have seen
what is Green Dot? What is this Green Dot thing?
Green Dot, my Chris isn't here. He would probably be able to explain it for you better. But what he does and his team does is they go out into the community and they hold these presentations that teach the community, again, how to intervene when they see whether it's domestic violence or it's sexual assault. They teach the community different ways to approach a situation and diffuse it before it goes further. And there's three D's, and I always forget the third one. It's distract. Oh, gosh. He's going to tease me when I get back to the office.
It's okay. You're on the spot. You're on the green dot right now.
So I'm SV.
Well, to teach you not – you know, there's being a bystander. There's being a passive bystander. Mm-hmm. And there's being a, you know, involved bystander. And like the other night, actually, I was at a place and these girls, young women, were waiting for the bathroom. And there was a gentleman standing there at the female bathroom the whole time, grabbing them, doing all this stuff. And I said, step away. Take two steps back. Take a breath. Step away. And he said, you shouldn't get involved, mama. And I said, step away.
Yeah, you picked the wrong mama to say that.
Take two steps back. Step away. Yeah. And then the people at the place we were at did come and, you know, got him to step away too. So, but that's what it takes. It just takes one person to just say, step away.
Well, what I find is interesting in this whole conversation is women's response to things, women sticking up for other women. And I think part of the conversation that is kind of vital, because now we're starting to talk more loudly about toxic masculinity and these traits of people who just they're not always men. I mean, I know women sometimes do assault men, but statistically, it's the greater perpetrator. But talking about having men talk with men about how to behave and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
And that's exactly what – I mean, Green Dot is a big part of that. And I think I just remember the three. It's distract, delegate –
and destroy. No.
Right. No, distract, delegate, and be direct, which is obviously what Leslie was in that situation. But that's – I mean, it's all about teaching men and women to handle themselves differently, but also – you know, be there for your community, whether it's male, female, whatever, when you see things that are going on. You know, pick one of those three Ds to kind of diffuse it. So.
Makes sense. So Kara's hosting a Lunch and Learn on Thursday, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And that's going to be held with Leslie as the featured speaker. That's tomorrow at 11:30 at the Charlotte County Community Foundation. Leslie, I'm wondering, and I asked you when this you first walked in the door, does it ever get easier to tell this story?
As Martina knows, I can do it without crying anymore. For a period of time, I was so at peace that I finally realized he wasn't going to be put away, and I actually was hoping upon hope he hadn't done anything again. So I was at peace. I let it go. I was last. But then when I found out he had, and then I reattached to it, no, there was no way of making it easier to tell the story. And the thing is for you to understand it. I mean, I was a little detached here, but for you to understand it, I have to let you know how it affected me. And it utterly changed my life. You aren't the same person afterwards. It's like a mosaic that falls, a plate that falls on the ground, and then you have to put it back together. You can glue it back together, and it can become this beautiful something else, like a mosaic. But it's never going to be that plate again. And that's kind of where it is. I've become something else, and I still have a lot of me there. But, however, it's always going to be there.
And I'd like to invite our caller on the line, if you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us before we wrap up this segment.
Sure. So I would say to women who are out there, never underestimate, you know, your situation and people who are with you. Because with me, I did. I underestimated them. I was there for a friend, and I have to mention, because I think that's what put me in the situation, was the fact that I had empathy. I don't drink, and he came to me, and I had met him previously, and, you know, he seemed like an okay person, and he was in a situation where he needed help, and I thought, you know, I can help this guy out. Let me just give him a ride. He seems okay. And when I tried to leave the situation, again, he didn't look like, you know, very much. He really didn't. He looked, you know, insignificant to me, yeah, is what I thought.
I agree.
And there is a power and a strength that comes out of even the tiniest person, that I tried to get away. And you can scream as loud as, well, I did. I screamed as loud as I could, and when I realized no one was coming to help me, I realized, and I said it in my head, one of us is going to die, and I figured it would be me, especially because he had a knife. And never underestimate your situation. Never underestimate the people that you're around and what they're capable of. And
do you want to say who you are, my darling?
Well, my name is Martina Torres.
And you're a survivor.
I'm a survivor. Oh, yeah.
And I love you.
And thank you. Love you, too. And I just know now that women aren't alone. I don't know too much about men. I'm not one. But I know when stuff like this happens, you're not alone. And it's really, really important to think about the impact that you can have for other people. If we can get those people put away fast, then you're helping all of us. So come forward.
Well,
come forward and save other people.
It's thanks to the bravery of people like you that
it really is.
This person has been put away. And for at least 13 years, he's not going to be able to do this to anybody else.
Or maybe 15, 16, or 17, or 18.
15, 16, or 17.
17, 17. Yeah, I mean, we have a sisterhood, and I have a brotherhood. I have a wonderful survivors, brothers that I love dearly. And I believe in the Me Too movement, but I also believe that you have to come forward. You have to do anything you can to stop them. Granted, we are textbook definition of why people don't come forward, because it took so many years, including DNA evidence, that sat for 2 years and nobody checked into it. We are textbook definition of it. But at the same time, we did it. We finally did it. And the community is safe.
It is. And I got to say, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you for telling us who you are.
Proud.
And I'm honored that you did this on my show.
I'm so, no,
thank
I've
you
got
so
chills.
Much. I've been crying, so.
I know. Here you go. Here's a tissue.
You know what I think about you, sister. You are the bravest, most courageous soul I know. And if you had heard her impact statement at that courtroom, I'm getting chills right now. It was unbelievable. You're strong, you're beautiful, and you're a survivor.
Well, and I love the admonition to never underestimate your own strength.
Never.
In surviving a situation, and then also being able to stand up and say that after that time. Okay, guys, I'm going to have to go. I have to get myself together. I'm sorry. That's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I really want to thank my guests, Leslie Barton, Punta Gorda-based realtor and sexual assault survivor and advocate. Leslie, thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you, yeah. And thank you, Martina.
Martina, it was so great to meet you over the phone, and thank you so much for calling and sharing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
And I also want to thank Sarah Elmore. She is the Outreach and Awareness Coordinator at the Center for Abuse and Rape Emergencies in Punta Gorda. Sarah, thank you for coming down for the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you, Julie.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll hear a conversation WGCU's Mike Kanairy had with a senior scientist and program manager at Moat Marine Laboratory about the salt-tolerant vegetable sea purslane that she's growing in an aquaponic system using salt water that's also raising redfish. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.